The scripture reading today comes from the book of Genesis, chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37, we'll read the first four verses, then pick up verse 12 through 28. Jacob lived in the land of Canaan, where his father was an immigrant. This is the account of Jacob's descendants. Joseph was 17 years old and tended the flock with his brothers. While he was helping the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, Joseph told their father unflattering things about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of the other sons because he was born when Jacob was old. Jacob had made for him a long robe. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of his brothers, they hated him and couldn't even speak nicely to him. And then verse 12, Joseph's brothers went to tend their father's flock near Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, "Aren't your brothers tending the sheep near Shechem? Come, I'll send you to them." Joseph said, "I'm ready." Jacob said to him, "Go, find out how your brothers are and how the flock is. Report back to me." So Jacob sent him from the Hebron Valley. When he approached Shechem, a man found him wandering in the field and asked him, "What are you looking for?" Joseph said, "I'm looking for my brothers. Tell me where they're tending the sheep." The man said, "They left here. I heard them saying, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. They saw Joseph in the distance before he got close to them, and they plotted to kill him. The brothers said to each other, "Here comes the big dreamer. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of the cisterns, and we will say a wild animal has devoured him. Then we will see what becomes of his dreams." When Reuben heard what they said, he saved them from them, telling them, "Let's not take his life." Reuben said to them, "Don't spill his blood. Throw him into this desert cistern, and don't lay a hand on him." He intended to save Joseph from them and take him back to his father. When Joseph reached his brothers, they stripped off Joseph's long robe, took him and threw him into the cistern, an empty cistern with no water in it. When they sat down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with camels carrying sweet resin, medicinal resin, and fragrant resin on their way down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What do we gain if we kill our brother and hide his blood? Come on, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let's not harm him because he's our brother. He's family." The brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they pulled Joseph out of the cistern. They sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. They brought Joseph to Egypt. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. This was not what was supposed to happen. Joseph had dreams that he had thought were from God, dreams of power and position, dreams in which his brothers finally realized who he was and would be sorry for all that ever bullied him, dreams in which everyone saw in him what his father saw in him, dreams of being everyone's favorite. But this was no dream. This was a nightmare. He found himself outnumbered and overpowered by the brothers whom he dreamed of ruling over. He had dreamed of exchanging his coat of many colors for an even more majestic robe. But now, it had been stripped from him and ruined. He had dreamed of rising to power, but now he had been cast low into the depths of a pit. Who was he without his coat? Would this be how his dreams ended? Would his brothers now have power to write the rest of his story? Would their fabricated lies be the last anyone heard of Joseph or his dreams? What could he do to escape from the pit? He might quickly have felt his way around the high walls, only to find no way out. He didn't have to see beyond the pit to know what was out there. He knew the rugged terrain and could only imagine what his brothers must have done with whatever remained of his provisions at the end of his prolonged search for them. Even if he were to escape from this pit, what was out there would make his survival just as unlikely. But the dreams, how could he give up his dreams? How could he let his brothers write the only story that would ever be heard about him? In either defeat or defiant protest, he might have picked up a stone, hoping to inscribe something on the bedrock at the bottom of the pit. Here lies Joseph, and his wildest dreams with him. Maybe he would write the names of each and every brother who had left him there to die. Some record of the story and how it ended. Some wild dream for justice prevailed. It was simply too dark. Maybe if there were more light from the mouth of the pit. Maybe if there were something to light a small fire. There was no way he could do anything to escape, to survive, to tell his story from the bottom of the pit. What resources or possibilities might lie beyond what Joseph was able to see? Is what he saw, what he could do, or even what he could dream, all he could hope for? Is that what would determine how his story would unfold, or simply fold? From the depths of the pit, he couldn't see the caravan approaching. He couldn't see the second thoughts beginning to be entertained by his brothers. He couldn't see Egypt from there. He couldn't see the Pharaoh or the distant famine. He couldn't see the place of power in the palace of Egypt. He couldn't see the one thing he might have thought he wanted more than anything else at that moment, an opportunity to avenge the abuse at the hands of his brothers. He couldn't see any of that from the cold, dark confines of the pit. Well, we know Joseph's story did not end there. God saw more for Joseph than he could see for himself. God's story for Joseph would continue until his name would be found, not desperately scraped on the bottom of a well, but inscribed in the roll call of the faithful in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, a chapter that would maybe be subtitled Surrounded but Not Confined. Joseph and the rest of the heroes of faith whose names are found in Hebrews chapter 11 were people who needed the power of God because of their circumstances. They found themselves in unbearable and unredeemable situations. They were all surrounded by one thing or another, whether it was family from within or foes from without, whether it was floodwaters or waters of the Red Sea, kings or armies of kings, they were surrounded by circumstances in which they found themselves hopeless. Their situations went beyond anything they could look to for rescue. Within the confines of where they found themselves, there was no way out, nowhere to turn, no help to be had. It took something beyond themselves and the limits of the world as they knew it. Andrew Root, in his Ministry in the Secular Age series, describes this kind of crisis as the imminent frame. An imminent frame is a situation in which hope for deliverance is based only on natural and material resources. Within the imminent frame, there is simply no way out. The crisis is inescapable by means of anything that's seen or known to exist. Faith and trust have to rest in something from outside of and completely beyond our imminent frame to offer any kind of redeeming hope. The good news for Joseph and for us is our God is much larger than our imminent frame. Astrophysicist and astronaut Serafina L. Brady Nance writes in her book, Starstruck, 70% of the universe is made up of dark energy. Meanwhile, 25% of the universe is dark matter. just 5% of the universe is ordinary matter. That's the ordinary matter of everyday life. Your hair, your clothes, your atoms and organs, the food you eat, and the dogs that kiss you, the air and the sea, the sun and the moon. Everything we know, everything we see is just 5% of everything in the universe. The remaining 95% of the universe is stuff we can't see and don't yet understand. Andrew Root goes on to write about a God who is, a God who spills over all categories and all concepts, and therefore can still be found in the context of our world. A God who is limited not only to the 5% of what we may be able to see or understand, but the other 95% as well. A God beyond our wildest dreams. Just as there is no way for us to escape life's challenges within the imminent frame, neither is there any way that the imminent frame might prevent a God who is from entering into whatever our circumstances may be. A God who is cannot be stopped. Faith stands squarely within the confines of reality and waits for God who is completely beyond the scope of that reality to come to us in the desolation of our own pit. Faith sees not only the walls of challenge but also sees the presence of the God who is within those same walls. We may spend so much time wondering what lies beyond us in that vast, unknown universe that we miss seeing the presence of the God who is standing with us right where we are. The book of Romans, chapter 10, reminds us the word that saves us is right here, as close as the tongue in your mouth, as close as the heart in your chest. How can that happen? How can the God who is so far beyond us also be that close to us? Ask Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah. Ask Isaac and Jacob. Ask Joseph. Their stories all tell us that when they were surrounded, caught between waters and arms, when they were in wells and in prison, when there was no way out, a space was opened up and God stood there with them. Maybe we are as sure that God can't enter our reality as we are, that we can't escape it. Maybe we're looking for our hope of deliverance from among the physical and material resources found within our own bleak circumstances. Maybe we're still trusting our own resourcefulness and initiative find our own way out. Great heroes of faith would tell us that while these kinds of encounters have no way out, God comes to us from beyond the scope of our limited reality and stands with us in it. It was their waiting, their looking for God in faith that broke open the space in which they could encounter God's presence. From within the choking and hopeless confines of their reality, they connected to something outside of and far beyond themselves. When you find yourself in a situation in which you may see no way out, remember that you're surrounded not only by an imminent friend, but by a great cloud of witnesses, witnesses whose stories attest to the God in whom they put their faith, a God in whom they met within their own pit. I like the image of that great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. It seems to balance the fears that we might have from finding ourselves surrounded by the challenges of danger that threatens to overcome us. This great cloud of witnesses is a collective that encounters and proclaims God is in our world, in our reality, and in our pit, whatever it is. And God is ever faithful to come to us here and now and provide a way where there is no way. A way that is beyond our wildest dreams.